The last time the Ultimate Fighting Championship invaded Columbus, Ohio, they produced one of their most memorable events with UFC 68. Of course, that was the night Randy the Natural Couture returned to the octagon to capture the heavyweight title with a win over then-champion Tim Sylvia. Well, 1 year later, they're back for UFC 82, this time headlined by Anderson Silva, taking on Dan Henderson in a UFC and Pride middleweight title unification bout. So will 82 be as memorable as 68? Well, here to answer that question and break down all the big fights on the card is one of the best MMA writers around, Mr. Sam Kaplan. Of course, you can read Sam's fine work at CBSSports.com, ProElite.com, and 5OuncesOfPain.com. Sam, my man, welcome back to the park.
Ariel, thanks for having me.
It's great to be talking with you just a few days before UFC 82. And like I said, you know, this is the second time that the UFC is coming to Columbus, Ohio at the Nationwide Arena. And when I think back to last year's card with all the hype surrounding Randy Couture, and, you know, there was, you know, Inside MMA on Spike and they would have the interviews with him and everything, I can't help but feel with maybe even a better card this time around that there's some lack of buzz for this one, some lack of hype. Do you share that assessment with me?
Yeah, I definitely feel like there is a lack of hype, but, you know, who do you point the finger at? You know, I don't think you can really blame anyone. You can't blame the UFC. You can't blame the fighters. Just Randy Couture is a one-of-a-kind athlete. There are very few athletes in this sport that carry the aura that he carries, and his return to MMA was an event itself. And, you know, Anderson Silva, you know, quite possibly the best middleweight striker in the world. I shouldn't say quite possibly. He is without question, at least in my mind. And then Dan Henderson, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. That's an amazing main event. But it's a main event that appears to mixed martial arts' hardcore base. It's not one that has really, you know, transcended into the casual base. Anderson Silva just, you know, for whatever reason, really has not become a mainstream star as of yet. Dan Henderson, still relatively new to the mainstream mixed martial arts community, having fought for so many years in Japan and for Pride. So, you know, again, this is a main event that has a lot of appeal to hardcore fans. I would go so far as to call it a dream matchup, but it just has not penetrated into the mind of the casual fan as of yet.
This one does have the added luster of it's a unification bout, and anytime you have belts on the line, especially unification, you know, even though some people might not be so familiar with the history of Pride, it definitely, you know, spices it up a bit. That said, you're coming off of UFC 81 with Brock Lesnar and a great, great showing in terms of pay-per-view buys. You know, 600,000 has been the rumor. Do you think that this one will kind of match that number, or is it kind of safe to say, despite the fact that they're both two great fighters, that, you know, the lack of name recognition at the top there will make it fall a little bit shorter than UFC 81?
Oh, I think it's going to fall way short of the estimates for UFC 81 that have been reported by the Wrestling Observer. I mean, I'm not very good at these estimates, but if I had to venture a guess, I would say maybe somewhere in between the 325,000, 350,000 range that I think we'll see for this pay-per-view. You know, I just don't know if there's been a lot of promotion for this event. And, you know, without Randy Couture, without Brock Lesnar, without a Chuck Liddell, you know, it's going to be very hard to really get out there and really, you know, to entice casual fans to go out there and spend $45 for this card.
What do you think of the fact that they're billing this, obviously, the unification of the Pride and UFC middleweight titles when Pride has been gone for almost a year now? They've only really had one opportunity to do a unification bout, and that involved Dan Henderson. And while we know that Pride, as an entity and as a promotion, is really dead at this point, that they're bringing it back because, well, you know, they have Henderson. He was the dual champ, and, you know, this will be the only unification bout from all, you know, they couldn't do with Emelianenko, obviously, and that was an obvious big one with Randy, and they're kind of doing this one, to me, after they just had the unification bout in September against Rampage. It's with the same opponent. For some reason, it just seems a little flat to me, the whole concept of unifying the Pride and UFC titles. Would you agree with that, or do you have a sort of different mind frame?
I think flat is an understatement. I'd go so far as to say it's meaningless, the unification aspect. I mean, Pride is dead. You know, the UFC really didn't, even when Pride was around, and, you know, even after they acquired it, they really didn't go out of their way to educate the fan base on what Pride is and what it meant as a global mixed martial arts organization. They just really did not do any kind. They really didn't do almost. Not, they did almost nothing to promote the concept of Pride. So to put that name out there all of a sudden, it's really not going to resonate with very many people. They're going to say Pride. What's that? And the fact that, you know, even after that unification match took place in September, you know, you didn't see the Pride title on television. It wasn't shown. You know, after Rampage 1, you didn't see him holding up two titles. You know, the title was never acknowledged after that point. You know, it's not referred to as the unified light heavyweight title. It's still referred to as the UFC light heavyweight title. And the winner of, you know, Saturday's match is going to be referred to as, you know, the UFC middleweight champion. And this is a UFC middleweight title match. The it's really nothing more than a, you know, when you look at the unification aspect, it's nothing more than the burial or the goodbye of the Pride welterweight title, the 183-pound title in Pride.
Very reminiscent of when WWE purchased WCW and they would make these unification bouts, but really always putting over their belt. Obviously, the powers that be at the UFC don't have that ability to put over their champion, but the title in itself is kind of the one being put over. But all that aside, you have, you know, when I heard about this match after it was really officially announced, UFC 77 in Cincinnati, Anderson Silva, Dan Henderson, as you mentioned, I mean, for hardcore MMA fans and maybe even beyond, this is a dream matchup. So let's get right to it. Obviously, Anderson has been really untouchable, and you can make a case for him being one of the most dominant champions in the history of the UFC against a guy, Dan Henderson, who is coming off that first loss against Quentin Rampage Jackson, a tough five-round battle, and here he is with a lot of pride at stake, you know, to pardon the pun, just because he had both belts, and now he's on the verge of potentially losing both of those belts. What are your thoughts on this matchup, how it's going to go, and ultimately, who do you favor?
Well, I do disagree with one thing you said in regards to Anderson Silva. I don't think he's been completely untouchable as the UFC middleweight champion. A year ago, around this time, I think Travis Luter gave him a little bit of a scare. So Anderson Silva looked human in that fight. And, you know, I know he had the knee injured, both knees were injured, and, you know, you really didn't see much of a takedown defense from Anderson Silva as a result of those injuries. But Travis Luter, you know, dried out the day before, you know, had a lot of problems making weight, was looked very weak in that fight, and still was able to get Anderson Silva on the ground and hold him down on the ground and utilize some ground and pound skills. Going into this match, I think that's going to be the strategy for Dan Henderson, try to put Anderson Silva on his back, test his wrestling ability, and quite frankly, test his jiu-jitsu ability. I know Anderson Silva is a black belt in jiu-jitsu, very dangerous off his back in a lot of regards, but I'm not crazy about his MMA jiu-jitsu. I don't know how well his jiu-jitsu skills translate to MMA. Yes, he can pull off the magnificent transition or the switch and do some great things off his back, but, you know, I don't know how his... I think, you know, if there's a weakness in his game, it's his ground game, especially his wrestling, which is where Dan Henderson excels. Dan Henderson, not much of a leg attacker, more of a Greco-Roman stylist, likes to go for the upper body, which gives him a unique advantage in this fight in that he's comfortable fighting close and closing the distance. And you have to do that against a striker like Anderson Silva. Dan Henderson has improved a lot as a striker, showed in that match last year against Vanderlei Silva. Not only, you know, has a good overhand right, but also, you know, I believe he knocked Vanderlei Silva out with a left hook. So both his hands are now pretty dangerous. I don't know if he's going to want to get into a striking match with Anderson Silva. I think he's going to want to maybe try to establish himself as a striker a little bit initially so that he can then try to set up, you know, I wouldn't say a shot, but he's going to have to set up something where he can close the distance, body lock Anderson Silva, and then go for some kind of trip takedown where he can put Anderson Silva on the mat, put him on his back, and then try to use his ground to pound.
And more to that point, I mean, obviously Rich Franklin is a big guy. He's a big middleweight. But Dan Henderson's a guy who's used to fighting at light heavyweight. He's used to fighting 205. Definitely a big, strong guy compared to the relatively smaller frame of Anderson Silva. Do you think that Silva is going to have trouble with battling a guy, you know, with Henderson trying to take him down, trying to sort of impose his will on him, and given the fact that he's will probably not, you know, he'll probably go into the fight maybe at 200 or something, will that pose to be another problem for Anderson Silva to deal with?
Oh, absolutely. Dan Henderson is not only strong, but he just has great overall technique. This is a guy who, if they would allow him to, he'd fight heavyweights. I mean, he doesn't really care about the weight. He wants to fight, you know, the best in any weight class. So against Anderson Silva, I think this is going to be a much easier task than some of the other challenges he's put himself into against guys like Vanderlei Silva and also Rampage Jackson. And Anderson Silva's got to be careful. He's got to make sure that he does not get locked up. He's got to keep distance between himself and Dan Henderson. If he gets locked up and he can't really extend his arms, can't extend his knees, then there's really not much there's not much damage he can do to Dan Henderson. So the key for Silva here is to control the distance and to control the range and keep Dan Henderson off him.
And what about the fact that Henderson, we all knew for a long time, I'm not going to say he had no interest in going down to 185, but he seemed a little reluctant to have to move down that weight class. You mentioned that he's even interested in fighting at heavyweight if they let him. Do you think that that's going to play some sort of tricks on his mind? I mean, the fact that he was sort of coming into this bout, not wanting to cut so much weight, not wanting to have to go through that process, and obviously now he's going up against a guy in Silva who's, you know, the best at his weight class right now. Does that play a factor right now, or, you know, 4 months later, it's really a moot point?
I think it's very moot. Now, I'm not sure if that was the primary reason why Dan Henderson didn't want to go down to 185. I mean, that's what he said publicly, you know, talking about not wanting to drop in weight. I think, you know, the bigger issue from what I've heard was he thought the bigger money matchups were in the UFC light heavyweight division. And, you know, no sooner than he gets a new contract from the UFC than you hear that he's, you know, willing to go down and, test himself at middleweight again. So I think, you know, now that Dan Henderson has got the contract he's looking for, is guaranteed that he's going to get the paydays, regardless of whether it's 185 or 205, I think you're going to see a very happy, motivated Dan Henderson in this fight. And I don't think his reluctance in the past to drop down to this weight is going to be a factor at all.
All right, so the big question, who are you liking, Anderson Silva or Dan Henderson?
I think it's the tie clinch versus the body lock, and I think the body lock's going to win, and I think Dan Henderson is going to expose that wrestling flaw in Anderson Silva's game and win by a second-round TKO.
Wow, very interesting. All right, even by TKO, very interesting. Okay, so...
Well, I think it's going to be a ground-and-pound ref stoppage.
Okay. And then the big question is afterwards, you know, this really is a question for both men, where do you see them going? Regardless of who is the champion, who are the potential opponents out there as number one contenders? I mean, we've heard the name Yushin Okami. Doesn't sound very sexy to me for, you know, a first title defense as UFC champ for Henderson and even Silva going up against Okami. What are you thinking as the next bout for the middleweight champ?
I think a lot depends on the outcome. I'm predicting an early finish, but if this match goes the distance and goes to a decision, and it's a tight decision, then there's no reason for the UFC not to come back with an almost immediate rematch, because, you know, Yushin Okami is not going to get a lot of people excited. There really is not an obvious number one contender. So if there's any kind of question about the outcome of Saturday's fight, you have to think that the UFC, their number one option is going to be to promote a rematch.
Okay, very interesting. Okay, so let's move on now. The other big bout that's being billed as sort of the co-main event, kind of a few notches down. It was talked about last night on Countdown to UFC 82. Heath Herring going up against Czech Congo. Somewhat, if Congo wins this one, he'll surely be in line for a title shot at coming off of his victory against Mirko Krokop in September. And the Heath Herring experience is an interesting one in the UFC. Almost had that great victory over Minotauro. Obviously fell a little short. What are you expecting from these two guys who at times might not present the most interesting bouts, but, you know, you got to love the heavyweights and the standers and the bangers.
You know, this is a tough one. I've gone back and forth on it, Ariel. It's just you don't know which Heath Herring is going to show up. When Heath Herring is prepared and healthy, he's one of the most underrated heavyweights in the world. When he's not motivated, when he shows up unprepared, he gets beat by guys like Jake O'Brien. So, you know, I think Heath Herring is healthy right now from everything that I understand. I also understand that he's supposedly pretty motivated for this fight. And I think that going into this, he's without question the better mixed martial artist of the two. Czech Congo is the better striker, but I think Heath Herring's all-around game is much better than Congo. Also has much more experience in MMA. I mean, Congo's background is as a kickboxer. So, you know, if Heath Herring brings, you know, fights, if Heath Herring fights up to his potential here, I think he's going to be able to defeat Czech Congo.
If Herring loses this bout, I mean, what do you make of his position within the UFC? That would be three losses out of his four bouts since coming over from Pride. I mean, how many more chances can this guy get?
I think he's going to get at least a couple more chances if he loses on Saturday night, assuming that he, you know, at least represents himself well. I mean, if he gets knocked out in 2 minutes, then all bets are off. But as long as he makes a good accounting of himself, I don't see why the UFC would not keep him around. Right now, the heavyweight division is not as strong as it was a year ago at this time when, you know, Mirko Krokop was still very new to the organization and Randy Couture was the heavyweight champion. So with some of the defections they've had, some of the issues they've had with other fighters at heavyweight, I think a guy like Keith Haring is very valuable to the UFC right now and definitely belongs. You know, if he can't, you know, establish himself as a top-tier fighter, there's a lot of value to having him as a mid-tier guy, a gatekeeper, if you will.
If Congo then wins, do you think he is the number one contender? I mean, you've heard some talk about Fabricio Werdum, and then that talk seemed to have quieted. You know, when you come off a victory over Congo and now against a guy, Haring, with his background, should he be given the slot as number one contender?
I would have to say so. I would have to say yes. You know, Fabricio Werdum, a lot of people are talking about him as a number one contender. I just never really understood that, you know, coming off that loss to Andre Arlovsky before the win over Gabriel Gonzaga. I just didn't think, you know, he had enough. I don't think he'd established enough in the UFC to deserve a shot at the UFC heavyweight title. No one can question his credentials outside of the organization, but I don't see how one win for a guy who was a borderline top 10 heavyweight, you know, was going to earn him a title shot. Czech Congo has been in the organization much longer, has more wins, you know, is much more of a familiar name to the fan base. So I think with an impressive win over Heath Haring on Saturday night, I don't think there's anyone in the heavyweight division that you could make a better argument for as a number one contender.
All right, so a few minutes ago we spoke about Yushin Okami. He'll be battling Evan Tanner. Evan Tanner is a sort of minor celebrity on the internet. It seems as though everyone's pulling for him. His first bout in almost a year back in the UFC has a lot of much publicized problems outside of the octagon. What are you expecting from Evan this Saturday night? And on the flip side, can Yushin Okami sort of, the best that he can, establish himself as one of the top three contenders in that middleweight division?
Well, if Yushin Okami wins Saturday night, he's without question the number one contender. I don't think there's anyone in the middleweight division that can make more of an argument for that spot, you know, outside of, you know, more a better argument than Yushin Okami for that spot. Evan Tanner, I would love to be able to recuse myself of making a prediction for this fight, because you don't know what you're going to get out of Evan Tanner. He's a 37-year-old guy who, you know, is just, you know, if he was able to get his personal demons under control, he could be fighting Anderson Silva in this match tonight. But because of all the distractions outside of the cage and the way, his inability to control his personal demons, Evan Tanner's a guy that you can't rely on him. We don't know what we're going to see Saturday night. He's been saying a lot of the right things in the media, but has he been doing the right things? We don't know if he's been showing up to all his training appointments. We don't know what kind of shape he's in and whether or not he's been really working on his cardio. And we don't know whether or not, if at 37, Evan Tanner can still be a relative factor in the UFC's middleweight division. Even if Evan Tanner's out there doing everything he's supposed to, the game has changed a lot since his last fight. The middleweight division, you know, the complexity of it is, I would say the intensity has grown a lot with Anderson Silva now at the top. Just the game has changed, and I don't know whether or not the game has passed Evan Tanner by.
Okay. So I guess the question marks are still out there for Evan Tanner. Another interesting bout that's going to be televised, John Fitch going up against Chris Wilson. A very interesting bout for a guy like John Fitch. Again, another guy who's being tabbed as a potential number one contender in his respective division. That would be the welterweight 170-pound division. And next month we'll be seeing George St. Pierre going up against Matt Serra for that title belt in Montreal. But here's a guy who's got an impressive winning streak on his hands and going up against Chris Wilson, a dangerous fighter, with the risk of, you know, every bout, puncher's chance, you never know what's going to happen. If he looks bad in this bout, does he all of a sudden lose that number one contendership and maybe a guy like Carol Parisian slides right in? Or do you think that regardless of what happens, John Fitch should be given that title bout, whoever wins between Serra and St. Pierre?
Fitch needs to win this fight to get that title shot. It's very hard to promote a guy as a title challenger coming off a loss. I just want to say, though, to me, for me, this match is the true co-main event. I wouldn't say co-main event. The true, the true semi-main event underneath Anderson Silva and Dan Henderson. I think this is going to be a great fight. A lot of people don't know about Chris Wilson, but Chris Wilson, a solid wrestler, trains out of Team Quest in Portland, Oregon, a very underrated striker as well, just a really young and up-and-coming welterweight prospect. Really happy to see him competing in the UFC, in the big time, and it's definitely worthy of, a shot here. Against John Fitch, though, it's just tough. John Fitch is a fighter that most people do not want to fight because of his wrestling ability. He can make good fighters look bad. And, I want to see if Chris Wilson sprawl can handle John Fitch's shot. And if Fitch gets Wilson on the ground and on his back, it could be a very short match. However, if Wilson can stand and keep the fight on its feet, then I think Chris Wilson has the outside chance to pull off an upset here. Wow. So this is not a layup for John Fitch by any stretch of the imagination. He needs to come to this match focused. He needs to take Chris Wilson seriously. And like I said earlier, he needs to win this fight in order to, have any shot at getting the next shot at the welterweight title after George St. Pierre and Matt Serra fight.
That would be undeniably a huge upset. So I put you on the spot right now. Chris Wilson, John Fitch, do you think that Wilson can actually pull it off?
I'm predicting John Fitch to win by unanimous decision, but it wouldn't surprise me if Chris Wilson made a strong accounting of himself and shocked a lot of people with his performance on Saturday night. Chris Wilson's no joke. A lot of people are going to be, they're going to be surprised by him. A lot of people were surprised by Tim Boach on the last UFC card when they showed his match on tape delay. I think a lot of people are going to, I think there's going to be the same kind of buzz about Chris Wilson coming out of UFC 82.
All right, Sam. And finally, I look at the rest of the card, and there's really three names that sort of jump out at the screen to me when I'm looking at this. Three guys who, if you ask me, this is make it or break it for them, especially in their careers in the UFC. Obviously, you have Andrei Arlovsky. We've all been following that saga, and he's facing Jake O'Brien on the untelevised portion of the card. And this is his last fight in the UFC. Not sure where he's going to be headed afterwards. Then you got a guy like Josh Koscheck, who's just coming off a tough loss to George St. Pierre, which seems many, many moons ago in August. And then Diego Sanchez, this potentially could be his third loss in a row. You have these three guys who, just a year ago were sort of the future of the UFC. Obviously, Arlovsky has been there for many years prior to Diego and Josh, but really three big names that the fans recognize. Quickly, if you could just run off, how do you foresee, Saturday night, pay-per-view's over, everything's done, Arlovsky, Koscheck, Sanchez, what do you think of their futures, coming off of Saturday night?
Win, lose, or draw, I don't think Andrei Arlovsky will be back in the UFC. His management is not really happy with the UFC from all indications that I've been told. I think that's a mistake for his management to try to rule out the UFC. I don't think Andrei Arlovsky is going to be able to garner the kind of money that his management thinks he's going to be able to attract. I don't know if a fight versus Fedor is going to happen or not. M1 Global, I don't know how strong their position is right now. So I don't see, a strong second or third tier organization willing to jump out and offer the money that Andrei Arlovsky's management's looking for. I don't think he's going to be able to get a better offer than he could from the UFC. So, a lot of people are kind of angry at the UFC here. I don't know. I think maybe the finger needs to be pointed at Andrei Arlovsky's management. That won't make them happy when they hear this, but I'm just calling it like I see it. In regards to Josh Koscheck, I think this match against Dustin Hayeslett was pretty much set up to get him back on the winning track, to allow him to get some more momentum going after that tough loss to George St. Pierre in August. As far as Diego Sanchez is concerned, I think he's in a similar boat as Josh Koscheck. This is a match that's been set up for him to win and try to get some momentum back and hopefully catapult himself into a position where he can start appearing on televised matches again.
All right, Sam. Great stuff as always. Really appreciate you taking the time to break things down for us. UFC 82, Pride of a Champion this Saturday night from Columbus, Ohio. Great stuff as always. 5OuncesOfPain.com, CBSSports.com, ProElite.com. And we even got a little plug on your CBS Sports column, and I very much appreciate that. Take care and enjoy the fights.
Thanks, Ariel.